We're facing a lot of problems in today's world, from constant threats of extreme storms, to flood risks, to perhaps even ourselves. The real estate sector has a number of challenges we need to overcome, and we need to overcome them quickly. So, will technology save us? That's a topic that's garnered much debate in the community. My name is Kelia Cowan, and I'm part of the marketing team here at Measurable. I sat down with Measurable COO Dana Arnold and Site 1001's Director of Business Development and Technology, Craig Wood, to talk about what we need to be saved from and how technology can play a role in scaling sustainability efforts across the built environment. Let's dive in and see what Dana and Craig have to say.
The main question that we're trying to solve here is, will technology save us? But one thing that we need to address before we can even say yes, no, maybe, is what do we actually need to be saved from? So Dana, I'd love to pass this to you. What's the current state of green buildings, both here in the US and going on there?
Great question, Cleo. from my perspective, when it comes to green building, we're talking about a building that has little to no impact on its surroundings. And to be able to do that successfully, there's means of measuring and quantifying that, utilizing technology. So when it comes to really the state of green building, you've acknowledged that buildings have a huge negative impact overall on the global environment, of the state of the earth, shall we say. And when it comes to green building, there's still a lot of aspirational things that we know we need to do, but because 99% of buildings are already built, we're struggling to adapt buildings to that reality, and how we can adapt buildings to be fully helping us and not hurting us in our journey when it comes to looking at the grand scheme of saving us. It's a really terribly worded answer, but hopefully you can pick some good bits out of that.
And Craig, what about from your perspective?
Yeah, so I think kind of an answer to what do we need to be saved from. I think we kind of need to be saved from our ever-expanding footprint, right? The increasing growth in the global population and the projections that 70% of the world's population will live in cities by the year 2050, right? 25-0. And if you look at the cities geographically, they only occupy about 2% of the landmass of the entire planet. Yet they generate 70% of the world's greenhouse gases. So I think that's what we're really looking to kind of save ourselves from. If we see this increasing growth in the population, we're going to see this corresponding ever-increasing growth in the CO2 emissions and the greenhouse gases. Now, the interesting thing is, if you look at green buildings and making them more environmentally friendly, you can reduce those CO2 emissions by, a third or so. So, and if you also look at the growth in, say, LEED certified buildings, starting in 2000 and how they've grown to, over 100,000 projects and buildings today, you can also see the correlations between the reduction in energy costs and the within those LEED buildings. So where I think, we look at the state of green buildings today, we see this phenomenal growth in LEED certifications and green building certifications. We see this need to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions within the city populations and the ever-increasing projections for growth in city populations. And I think that technology can certainly play a real key goal in mitigating those greenhouse gas footprints that we're going to be facing in the future.
So I want to stay on this topic of how technology can actually help us get to that goal. Can you give us at least one example around a technology that you've seen effectively reduce those emissions and get us to that sustainable building dream?
Yeah, is that for me?
Yes, that'd be great.
Okay. So what we're seeing right now is really in terms of the IoT sensors in particular, and measuring the CO2 footprints more granularly. It's almost equivalent to if you think about submetering your energy and measuring your energy down to a square foot basis. Well, now we're starting to see where we're measuring CO2 down to maybe not precisely that square foot basis, but at a much more granular level than we have been previously in certain cases. And we're also measuring temperature performance. And what that is leading to is a reduction in the case of CO2, reducing the overventilation of buildings, which is reducing the energy footprint and reducing the energy costs. And then also, you know, from a temperature standpoint, still today, you know, the number one complaint of tenants is it's too hot, too cold. So we've got to get better at managing that and leveling the temperature throughout the building to, narrow comfort zones, which will also reduce the energy consumption out of the building. So those are a couple of examples that we've seen.
Dana, what about from your end? What are you seeing in the green building space where technologies can actually help us do our jobs better?
There's probably a good 4 to 5 areas where I see technology really driving change within the built environment. Definitely agree on the IoT component, and obviously Craig knows way more in depth than that component of being able to measure what matters within a building. Making sure we're not just throwing sensors and walking away, but gathering data at the right places at the right time and making actionable decisions from the data in which is gathered. We're seeing quite a bit of technology connecting all the dots within the built environment from not only points of entry, points of consumption, and how that data is managed. When it comes to managed and reported, really, with certifications as well, certifications moving from paperwork to data-based performance is a huge trend, as you see USGBC with the adoption of ARC, looking at what BOMA, BREEAM, GRES were trying to do to really connect the data from consumption to action and results from that action. One other technology piece that I think is also very important when we're really talking about saving us is really on the generation side, from renewable energy, is making sure that we are generating energy in a sustainable manner and we are replenishing what we take from a resource perspective and really managing those resources effectively and utilizing technology to make sure that we are efficiently producing and replenishing our energy sources and then efficiently utilizing them and then obviously continuing to manage, measure, and improve upon those pieces, especially when it comes to technology around resiliency as well, of being able to really understand risk, design, utilizing technology to manage to those risks, and then obviously celebrating the wins when there's cost avoidance components within the building as well. Mm-hmm. But the main thing is efficient generation and replenishment of energy sources, efficient use within an application of energy, whether that be in a building or even you can go into mobility there, and then efficient means of quantifying those actions.
And when it comes to the efficiency, where do you think there's the biggest room for growth? What do we have today, and where do we need to have the technology be in order for us to really excel at what we're doing here?
I think we've spent a lot of time talking about energy and how we're managing that effectively. I think there is a huge gap in how we handle water. from the generation and the cost of water to our lack of infrastructure to efficiently manage water consumption with a building, within a building. Because it's cheap, people don't necessarily pay its true value, and therefore it's not treated with as much respect, which water really is our most valuable resource for energy. But because you're dealing from the future in a way with the cost, the cheap cost of water, I think there's a lot of room for improvements, not only on how we extract, where it's extracted, how we're ensuring we're replenishing our water resources, using them efficiently. And honestly, I think we should be paying a lot more for water these days.
What do you think it's going to take for us to truly value water in the way that is needed?
There definitely needs to be a little bit more regulation on the extraction and true cost of water, and thoughtfulness and replenishment. As we've gone through quite a few droughts here in California over the last years, and the snowmelt that we're used to relying on is slowly diminishing, how do we deal with that situation in terms of utilizing the little that we have efficiently? But how do we look at, how do we create a renewable water, replenishing fresh water?
Mm-hmm. And Craig, what about you? Where do you think there's a gap in terms of our management of resources and the technology that we use to help us be more efficient?
I totally agree with Dana on the water piece. I think it is the undervalued resource, and it's largely due to the fact that the pricing of water is a lot different versus the pricing of the electricity and the energy needed to run the building. Aside from that, I think it's the other resources, and I'll probably answer this a little bit differently. The other resources are just the human resources within the building, and deploying those in ways that can be done more efficiently in terms of managing costs inside the building and making the building more sustainable financially. So, and then, looping back on the CO2 piece, I think we're going to see a lot more measurement of CO2 in the future, and how that also plays a role in the efficiency of the building.
Got it. And what do you think are the challenges that we would need to address to utilize this technology, especially with the CO2 measurements, more effectively?
Yeah, I think there are a few things actually overall that are kind of impeding the progression of technology and the greater adoption of technology and the utilization of it in ways that can help us most. Namely, you have proprietary systems and technologies. So for example, within the BMS systems today, generally they're configured in very proprietary ways. Typically, the vendor that installs and maintains that BMS is going to configure it in a way that's largely unique to them, so that even if you go to another building owned by the same company that may have the same BMS solution, but for some reason might be using a different vendor, it would have a totally different configuration, which presents its own challenges in extracting data and getting insights into the performance of those two buildings and benchmarking them against each other. So the proprietary systems is a challenge. Non-standardization is also a challenge, slightly a different issue. If you look at the IoT side with the sensors and the integration, the software, and the AI and machine learning teams that are required to interpret the insights, there's a lot of fragmentation out there in IoT. And the challenge that you have right now is most commercial real estate firms today aren't really set up to manage those differences easily. And so that kind of prevents some of the adoption or complicates the adoption of IoT. And then lastly, I think there needs to be a shift in mindset. When I talk to customers today, I'm still talking to people that are, facilities management personnel, right? And really, I share with them that the role of facilities management is really expanding and evolving and changing. And today, I think it should be called smart or sustainable building operations instead of facilities management, because facilities management is kind of a more reactive term, right? I'm just managing my facilities. It's almost kind of passive. Whereas really what they're doing today and what technology makes possible is smart building operations or sustainable building operations. And when you look at it that way, you're really redefining the role that you're playing within the building and what you need to be doing in terms of your sustainable building strategies and so forth. So I think it's a maturity issue in terms of technology with the non-standardization proprietary systems and how that part of the industry has evolved in the past and what will need to happen in the future. And then I think it's also just a shift in mindset and the importance of recognizing that this is really sustainable building operations and smart building operations. The future is going to be very different from where the traditional facilities management mindset has been in the past.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And I do want to go back to one of your earlier points, but while we're on this reactive versus proactive discussion, I'd love to hear more about your thoughts on how we really achieve that shift in mindset. Is it coming from an institutional way of thinking about the way we operate our buildings? Is it changing with technology? Where do we need to be in order to have a proactive way of operating our buildings?
I think it's a little of both, actually. I think technology will get us there and help drive it. But I think once we get some of the larger companies and institutions out there that have adopted it and have written some use cases, we have some published use cases of how this is all happening, then I think we'll see that kind of shift in mindset. And for example, like today, I don't really read many blogs titled, facilities management versus smart building operations or something along those themes. And so I think it's going to take a shift from some of the bigger players and some more data and shared use cases getting out into the industry before people recognize that, hey, this is really happening and this is possible today.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely have a few challenges that I definitely see as barriers that we need to break through when it comes to really solving this problem within the built environment. When Craig touched on the point of the standardization of data, I think that is absolutely crucial for how we look and compare and make actionable decisions on a global scale. If we are just looking at individual bespoke solutions at an individual property, we're missing how that ties into the bigger picture. So we really need to focus on how we can standardize the data collection, the data organization, the data management, the data comparison components, which is definitely something that rings so true to my heart about how we can help to solve these problems and actually identify trends across a global portfolio of buildings. The other, I think, bigger barrier, because I think the standardization of data theoretically is very easy. Application, I think, is a little bit challenging. But currently within how buildings are owned and managed, I think the leasing structure and sense of ownership and level of responsibility across multiple parties for the sustainability of a building is definitely a challenge. Buildings that are owned and managed by the same people typically are more driven to take action around this. Buildings that are owned and not touched by any level of ownership, I think there's a lot of lack of responsibility for the long-term components for how that building is operated. And I think there's a lot of improvements that can be done in lease structures to ensure that incentives are in the right places for all parties involved to really drive more sustainable building.
What sorts of incentives do you think that we could be pulling into our leasing structures?
I think there's a couple of different things. One, starting very simply, the requirement to share data to make sure that not only the tenant of a building can understand the overall impact that they're having within a property, And then the flip side of a tenant sharing information with the building. It starts there, and obviously a lot of benchmarking laws that are coming out are helping to force this data exchange to happen. It's definitely posing a lot of challenges of, oh crap, we as the ownership are responsible by law to report this information, and we don't have really the legal means of gathering it. So I think that's going to help solve some of those components. The other challenges are when it comes to, you know, the who's paying for the utility information and who has control over the output of that. For example, this office space that we're in here, we have a very antiquated AC system that we don't have any control over when it turns on, when it turns off, but we're responsible for paying for it. Mm-hmm. So I think aligning the service and control with who is paying for it, I think is definitely something that needs to happen when there's big black boxes of exchange of services and finances. That's when a lot of complications can happen.
Right. And while we're on this black box subject, both of you spoke to the need for both standardization of data and also, it sounds like to me, more of an open exchange of data. So what do we need to do as an industry to get to a point where we can openly share both our data and our process around gathering that data to get us to the next level?
That's a little bit of a tricky one, and I'll take a stab, and I know Craig will definitely play off of this one. I think we need to, I think there's a big fear of if we're somehow disclosing this information publicly, while intentions may be good, that it could potentially backfire in terms of insurance liability, legal ramifications with information. As we gather more data, the responsibility for ensuring that you are not hurting or impacting people within the building. You know, if we start throwing environmental air sensors across all of our buildings and we're noticing that there are huge levels of toxicity in the air, there creates a sense of liability. Well, there's liability on the person who's gathering that data to take action on it, mm-hmm. where insurance companies aren't necessarily equipped to handle that. I'm sure employers would love that, but there's a little bit of a fear of, if I measure it, then I have to be responsible for it, mm-hmm. and we need to break down those fears and make sure that people who do have control and ownership over those things have the responsibility that comes along with it.
Do you think fear is the only barrier here, or
fear,
is it technology,
lawyer, money, public outcry? You know, if you realize a building literally has been killing its occupants slowly over time, that can come back in and bite you when you start measuring data.
Craig, I'm sure this is a question that you folks face a lot as you're getting more sensors into buildings. Can you speak to the ramifications?
Yeah, I think in terms of the sharing and the openness, it's also part of that shift in mindset that I think still needs to occur in a lot of ways. And really one of the key drivers, which is kind of nice that I'm seeing, is really this growing prevalence of benchmarking. And I say it's kind of nice because originally I was thinking this problem would only really get solved through regulatory actions or behaviors. And it would be really great if it's kind of a self-reporting movement that ends up happening. And what we're seeing more and more of is, in fact, we were just talking with a company the other day that, you know, they're developing this scoring index for certain organizations and businesses. And the interesting thing is, for some of those businesses, they've got a lot of data, so the scoring is really accurate. For other businesses, they don't have as much data, so the score they're creating is kind of arbitrary. But what happens is that business that suddenly gets a score without really having contributed any data, right? They're saying, hey, wait a minute, I've got a score here, and why is it low? And all of a sudden they're saying, well, wait a minute, if I send them more data, you know, it increases my score. And so it's this self-interest that we're seeing out there to benchmark properties and businesses as well, that's helping drive this data sharing concept. And I think you guys have even seen maybe growth initially where people just needed to benchmark their own buildings within their own portfolios. And then now if you can add, well, okay, now here's all your buildings compared to other same, you know, buildings with similar profiles, that gets more interesting. So that's what we're kind of see take place. It's kind of all of a sudden these customers are becoming aware of their own data. And then if you can show them how that data sits relative to other data, they become a little more open to this kind of data sharing economy, if you
will. So Dana, I know Measurable does a lot of work in this field. Can you build on that?
Absolutely. You know, with all the, 30,000 properties that utilize Measurable today, a lot of them, one of the main drivers for utilizing our software is to benchmark buildings within their portfolios to help them identify who's good, who's bad, how do I define good or bad, and how do I look at deploying capital to these buildings so I can continually improve my overall performance across multiple buildings. So the kind of the self-benchmarking internally has definitely been around for a while. Obviously, Energy Star was kind of the start of that trend of really helping to understand whether something is good or bad around energy. Measurable's taking that to the next level of looking at, okay, well, let's look at its electricity, its fuel, its carbon, its water, its waste, and how do we benchmark that against similar buildings and any, you know, any relative peer sets with any of those items. And then you've got these bigger surveys out there where it is a literally voluntary disclosure of portfolio-wide information, such as GRES. And they're looking at how do we dive into understanding deeper what is good and bad. And really the way to do that is at the asset level. And how do we understand data quality from a big picture context? And I think there are some issues that we found in that process around data consistency, data standardization that is not there, that makes it actually very hard to look at a portfolio of buildings and say, is something good or bad or trending in the right way over time? Because there are so many different variables and there are so many different ways in which people have looked at their buildings to benchmark. So kind of connecting the gap, utilizing technology of data standardization from a building up to your portfolio to be able to provide that context on voluntary disclosure benchmarking to be able to actually drive the results that we're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Craig, what is Site 1001 seeing in terms of data quality in the market? Obviously, you're pulling in a lot of data from a lot of different sources and sensors. So how is the market trending to ensuring that while we're both looking at whether the performance of the building is good or bad and the quality of the data that we're pulling in from that building, how do we determine if that's good or bad?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it really varies significantly is what we're seeing right now. And that really goes back to the issue of the proprietary designs and setup. There are some systems that are set up within buildings that are easy for us to get a lot of data very quickly and easily. There are other systems that are just designed to where it's quite problematic. And there's really little that we can do short of a fairly significant investment by the building owner to remedy that situation. So from our own solutions that customers adopt, obviously we get very clean and kind of fluid data that way. From a lot of the IoT sensors that we deploy, we can get very clean and fluid data. And then layering in some external third-party data, weather data, or even data from yourselves in the future. That obviously we have good information on. But there's still some core information within the building, within those BMS systems that can just vary significantly. And, we do the best we can right now to normalize it and compare it to what we have. But, in some cases, it remains a struggle. And it's just probably going to take some time within the industry for that to really kind of remedy itself.
So I think both Dana and Craig have spoken in a number of ways to this ideal world in which we're sharing good quality, clean data in a standardized format across different parties to grow as an industry. Can you both speak to where you see the future of green buildings? Craig, perhaps you'd like to start, being that you wrote a blog on this relatively recently.
So I think the future of green buildings, and talking about the ideal world I hope we get to, is capturing that holistic data, just getting all the data from that building. And as I just mentioned, that the BMS data is kind of the black hole today, and kind of the weakest link and what's challenging link in getting the data. But really started capturing all that data so that we can get the new insights that we haven't had previously. We can see how the building's performing in ways that we haven't been able to determine before. And then once we do that, the second stage is really, and I know Dana and I have talked about this, is taking that data and taking those insights and looping them back to that design and construction stages. So the new buildings that are coming out of the ground, right, are built in ways that are fundamentally different than the buildings that we have today. And they're much more green, much more sustainable. They get to that net zero impact, right, on the environment. And then the third stage that I'd like to see in terms of the green buildings is how they link with the cities of the future, either from a microgrid standpoint and exchanging energy back and forth, and we're managing the energy supply and the grid in different ways at a minimum, so that cities are planning their resources more intelligently around the growth of the buildings, because they're the ones consuming the energy. So I think it's those three steps. It's that capturing the holistic data, linking the insights from those data back to design and build, and then linking all of that with the cities in which those buildings exist.
Do you think that's something that the companies themselves will be opting into, or is this something that's going to be a top-down approach regulated by the government?
I'm sure we'll see some regulation around it, but I think if there's an economic incentive, that the companies will migrate it to it on their own. And particularly if I look at the microgrid capabilities, or the exchanges that could be happening, if there are incentives around that for companies, there's really no reason why somebody wouldn't just opt in for that and take advantage of that themselves. So I'm hoping that, and there's also growing evidence around the green buildings and the energy reductions increasing asset value. So I'm hopeful that those kinds of economic incentives will drive kind of a self-interest and a voluntary behavior, and really reduce the need for any required regulation.
Dana, what about you? Where do you see the future of green buildings?
Far in the future are we talking? Obviously, we talked a little bit about, how new buildings coming out of the market are really tackling the challenges that we're seeing head on. I think that the biggest challenge we face is the fact that we have a lot of existing buildings, over 35 million commercial buildings globally that are currently sucking up energy and resources. So from my ideal world, as we tackle how do we update our existing infrastructure, even from a grid standpoint, into the buildings, for how we can actually adapt our existing buildings, as it's not feasible to tear down all the buildings and rebuild them. Obviously, that does happen over time, but we need to find ways in which to ensure that we're updating our existing buildings in the most efficient way. And I think the way to do that is gathering data, benchmarking, and measuring the right things in the right places to make sure we're driving the appropriate actions that need to happen at a building. So really using measurement to drive action within the built environment. And that goes from everything from the source of energy, where is that energy coming from, to where is the water coming from, how is your waste being generated, and how that stuff is all being handled. And a lot of that is really behavior driven. Within the existing environment on top of infrastructure updates. So my ideal world is we take time, money, and effort to take care of what we have, putting the right value in the right places for those pieces so we can make sure that we are building a future that has actually a future.
And like you said, in your ideal scenario, it's not feasible to necessarily knock down every outdated
35
building that exists in the world.
A million buildings. Let's just knock them all down and start over.
So, for those 99% of buildings that are already in existence, how can they easily, effectively, and cost efficiently upgrade to a more sustainable operating structure?
Invest in Site 1001 and Measurable, and we'll help you get there. Is that too salesy?
Be a little salesy.
But you need to have systems to measure what matters. We'll use our tagline there. You guys love me right now, right? We need to be measuring the right things and drive action and investing in those items or those components within the built environment. And you know, if you're a building owner or operator and you don't know how your building is performing, you are wasting money. And you should save the money, invest that back into the building to really drive longer term returns. Focus on the long term, not on the short term. That's better for everybody as well as our economy.
Yeah.
Greg, do you have any other points to add on to how we can achieve these upgrades without breaking the bank?
Yeah, it's certainly a migration. It's not something that happens overnight. And I think the first thing that needs to happen for folks is they need to stop managing building at the facilities level and start managing at the smart and sustainable level. And the fundamental difference between the two is when you're managing at a facilities level, you're managing your individual components of the building and you're getting data feeds separately and reacting and responding and managing those feeds individually. That smart and sustainable building is that holistic data view. And so the first thing they really need to do, or I guess what is most critical, is they need to set their roadmap and define their strategy as to how they're going to get there. And if they start thinking along those lines, they can get there in ROI-based steps. So it's not something that breaks the bank. They can implement little by little and in ways where they get their returns. And they make the transition.
Fantastic. And obviously those on the call are already working in this sector, but how can we help educate and train the next generation of sustainability and technology professionals who will be advancing the future that we're discussing here of sustainable buildings? What education is necessary to ensure success?
Yeah, actually, I'd like to go first on this one because I think I might tee up Dana on this as I'll probably answer it a little bit differently. You know, I'll answer it much more, I think, from a technology standpoint. You know, I think what's going to be critical is we're going to have data and data and lots of data, and all that data is going to have to be interpreted. We're going to have to derive those insights. So what I see as being critical is we're going to need those data scientists, right? We're going to need those machine learning people that can do that. So they're going to need the skills for math and statistics and probabilistics and data engineering and software and so forth on being able to do that. Now, here's the key point, though. Even if we pull some of the best mathematicians and statisticians out of the leading universities today and say, okay, here's the data, they still need domain expertise in order to be able to interpret and understand the data in a way that's meaningful. And that's where, Dana, you probably would have more insights in terms of the environmental expertise and the sustainability expertise and fields of study that perhaps they can focus on to have that domain expertise.
Yeah, I think there needs to be a much bigger focus on systematic understanding of not only how something works in isolation, but how something works at a very macro scale. Really, you know, from the early stages on and early education through collegiate and career training opportunities about how one thing affects the other in everything that we do and we say. you know, recently was watching this documentary called On One Strange Rock. It's a documentary it's Will Smith is hosting it. Have you watched it?
No.
It's really good. It's a National Geographic.
Okay.
But it kind of got me thinking a lot along this lines of topics. It's kind of all diving into how weird our Earth really, really is, and all of the pieces that work together to actually make oxygen for us to survive, like clean water. How does that happen? And all the little things from little microorganisms that play into our what we consider our normal, and understanding that effects of how we operate in this Earth do affect what that normal looks like, and can have devastating effects on humanity if we don't think about systems and the circular economy from another USGBC topic from like a year and a half ago from that talk. You know, we're really talking about how one touches two and three and four. We really need to drive that way of thinking into our education of really understanding that from that level. And how does that practically, and how do you practically apply that in anything that you're doing? So we making sure that we're building the future that actually will have a future and not a future that results in us not having oxygen. or other key things that we need to live. Yeah, oxygen, water, these are all very, very important things that we need to make sure we're doing what we can do to make sure they exist. And I think understanding that our actions do affect those things, and that if we do not take action, there will be dire consequences. And somehow that has become extremely political, which is a totally other topic.
Definitely a different discussion, and we won't go down that rabbit hole. And I have one last question for both of our fantastic panelists. Can technology save the future of green buildings?
So my answer to this is actually really pretty simple, and that is, will technology save us by itself? No. Can we get to where we want to be without technology? No. Technology isn't going to do the job by itself, but it provides immense value in enabling us to do our jobs and getting us there. So that's my answer on that.
Yep, that's pretty much exactly my response as well. The technology alone is, but it's how we utilize it to drive the results in which we need to have as the end result. So it's all about it helping us and being a catalyst to get there, and we won't get there without it. But we need it to drive the needed actions and to help guide us make better decisions.
Thanks so much for tuning in to our recording of Will Technology Save Us with Craig Wood from Site 1001 and Dana Arnold from Metrible. We hope you enjoyed the discussion and will join us for another fireside chat soon. Take care and have a wonderful day.